As healthcare in America becomes more expensive, doctors are also feeling the pain, overworked and overstaffed. So when is it time to switch providers, and how do you know which ones you can trust? Well, during the COVID pandemic, Dr. Joseph Ferran became known for his groundbreaking work treating the most severe patients and working 700 days straight during the outbreak. He's one of the founders of the Frontline COVID-19 Critical Care Alliance and joins us now with more on this. Good morning to you. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning. Thank you for the invite.
And I see all of the books that you've written there behind you. Dr. Ferran, you are a world leader for your research on COVID-19. You also created the Medical Prevention and Research Institute, which is in Houston, Texas. So you know the importance of the doctor-patient relationship. What questions should patients ask if they're considering switching doctors? And how do you know if there is a concern or perhaps a misalignment in approach of your doctor?
There is no question that there is a misalignment. There is a lot of patients that, you know, they go to their doctor and they realize, hey, my doctor is not listening to me. I'm trying to communicate with my doctor and they are not answering. One of the issues that we have is that, you know, patients are being seen as a number. As a physician, you know, our payments are getting less and less and less and less. So what are doctors doing? Managing volume, large numbers of patients. So the more patients I see, the more money I make. And a lot of doctors don't care what's going on with the patient. It's get them in, get them out. It's like a revolving door.
It's amazing to hear a doctor actually say this too. What are some signs that a doctor may not be keeping up with developments in their field?
Well, I mean, in all fairness to all the healthcare providers, it's difficult to keep up. I mean, there is so much data coming out. But if you are a person that truly cares about your patients, the minimum that you can do is for that particular patient, look up what's a new thing that's going on. Look up what's going on and try to look for trustworthy sources, not sources that are, you know, sponsored by the big pharmaceutical companies and things like that.
So what are some practical steps that patients can take to change their doctor if they feel it's necessary?
Education, education, education. Educate yourself. Learn more about the doctor. Is this a doctor that is kind of in line with what I believe in? Is this a doctor that, you know, has made contributions to the field? Or is this just a doctor that is a follower, that just, you know, just follows? And is this a doctor that thinks straight and doesn't like to think outside the box? And that's what I would look for.
So don't think outside the box. Are there any other particular challenges or considerations you should be aware of when switching providers?
Absolutely. I mean, is this a doctor that has been following those trends and just follows what, let's say, for example, Big Pharma is telling them to do? Or is this somebody that is doing his own independent research and trying to learn more? Again, I have become a person that instead of thinking, let's treat the illness, I'm now thinking more about let's prevent the illness. So I'm thinking a lot about direct patient care, contrary to, you know, the six different specialties that I have.
How can patients advocate for their own health and ensure they do receive the quality care they deserve?
They need to, I mean, the patients have to. And, you know, the pendulum has switched really, really bad. Remember in the past, we used to have, everybody had a family physician, everybody knew, you knew your doctor by first name. I mean, there was a bond. Now that has been destroyed. So patients need to look for.
Looking ahead, doctor, how do you see the doctor-patient relationship evolving in response to some of these ongoing challenges in healthcare delivery, such as the COVID pandemic and technological advancements?
I really think that the pendulum has to go back to where we were, you know, 50 years ago. I mean, has to, because we have become extremely subspecialized and, like I said, becoming a revolving door, get them in, get them out. Now we really need to think of direct patient care, getting those patients to receive treatment or mostly prevention before they need to get treatment.
And you can continue the conversation with the FLCC doctors this Wednesday for their weekly webinar and even ask your own questions. It does air at 7 p.m. Eastern Time on Rumble or through Zoom. When you register to learn more, just head to their website at flccc.net. We'll also have a link on our website, thenationaldesk.com. And Dr. Joseph Ferran, we appreciate you joining us here this morning.
Yes, that was our Dr. Joe Ferran interviewed on the National Desk. That's a program that's on the Sinclair television stations that asked us about a hot medical topic, the question of whether or not to change a doctor and how to do it. This has been on many of our minds during the last 4 years when treatment or the lack of it during the pandemic has been an issue like never before. Welcome to the FLCCC Weekly Update, everyone. I'm Joyce Kamen, Vice President of Public Information of the FLCCC, sitting in for Betsy, who is slightly under the weather. So we're thinking of you, as always, Bets. Tonight, we are going to welcome the aforementioned Dr. Barone and Dr. Kat Lindley, both from Texas and two of our top physicians, who lectured together on the topic of changing doctors at our winter educational conference in Phoenix. And later on, we're going to tell you how to get a recording of that. But right now, they are going to address this, I'd say a delicate subject with you, and then take your questions about it. Just a reminder that our top nurse, CRNA Christina Moros, is already online to answer your questions that you type into the Q&A portal during this program. After the discussion, we're going to take some of those questions live right here. So we'll get started without any delay and welcome Drs. Barone and Lindley. Good evening, doctors. Thank you for being here. We're so excited to have you. Let's just start out. How did both of you get interested in this topic, and when did this question become of importance to you both?
And so, you want me to start, Jeff?
Sure.
Okay. Ladies first, always.
Thank you. So, I'm a family physician here in Texas, and I really never wanted to be my own boss. I used to be a medical director for a large rural hospital here in Texas. I was in charge of 5 clinics, had lots of nurse practitioners that worked with me. And the time kind of came for me to change the way I was practicing, because I was seeing that, you know, most of the medicine is really bureaucracy. And there is a lot of stuff that you have to do to take care of the patient, but like mostly spending a lot of time behind a computer and a lot of things that just never have anything to do with direct care. And I have several friends who are already doing direct primary care. So when the time came, I decided to open my practice. And for those of you who are in healthcare and want to know how to do it on your own, I did really with $5,000. I rented a office in my small town where I live. I bought my the examining table off of Craigslist, used my doctor bag with the blood pressure cup from medical school, my stethoscope, otoscope, and then ordered some of the supplies on Amazon. So, and once I started doing that, it changed really the relationship I developed with my patients, because it was just me and them. You know, I decided to abandon the whole insurance system and just kind of go into this direct primary care, which is a membership type fee. Those first few days, like it took me to really understand also how our relationship has changed. And over time, patients have become really family and friends. And I would say it's the best thing I've ever done, personally and professionally.
Good. Joe, what about you?
From my standpoint, you know, I guess I didn't get to meet Kat until relatively recently. And it's fascinating because, you know, throughout the years, I became specialized and subspecialized and subspecialized and, you know, had 6 specialties behind me. And I was taking care of the sickest of the sick. And obviously during COVID, all hell broke loose and, you know, we have to try things. And one thing that was very obvious during COVID was that the one thing that we had not done was prevention. I mean, we were just taking care of people, but, you know, I even as an internist, you know, I said vitamin D, vitamin C, you know, it were things that didn't make too much sense. But once I leave them, I said, wahoo, maybe I'm doing the wrong thing. Maybe instead of having to take care of people in the far end of their illness, maybe I need to start looking into prevention. And I've always been very similar to Kat. My patients they become part of the family. I mean, we feed sometimes our patients in our office. We bring them food to our office. I mean, we like them. We know them by first name. It's a completely different story. They have our cell phone numbers. I mean, really, it's not the classic practice. So when I get to meet Kat, we went to the Porkfest Festival in New Hampshire, and they asked us to talk about
these kinds of things and from our different perspectives. And we actually hit it off because we both have the same concept, which is let's take care of patients. Let's try to help people as best as we can. And despite of our differences in training, we both have one common goal. And that common goal is to help people. Forget about the patient coming to your office with pancreatic cancer. No, it's Mr. Smith that comes in with illness and, you know, be a little more humane. That is, it's something that really annoys me about the current healthcare system. So at that point in time, we started talking about, okay, well, if that's the problem that we have in the country, how can we fix it? I mean, it's just a few of us that are trying to fix it, but in reality, everybody else is doing something completely opposite. Right. And just like I said on that interview, they get them in, get them out. It's, you know, it's a revolving door.
It is.
Because everything is based on money.
Yeah. So you know, I think most people would characterize, if you will, the American healthcare system as impersonal at best. I know both you're from Croatia, correct, Dr. Lindley? And Joe, you're from Mexico. So how did your backgrounds in medicine in your respective countries give you sort of a broader view of what was happening in American medicine and how you can step in and model the change for it?
So for myself, I'm actually doctor of osteopathic medicine. And I actually chose that path specifically. So in the United States, you have allopathic medicine, which is MD, and then you have doctor of osteopathic medicine, which is a DO. We get the same education and training, except that DOs also get education and training in osteopathic manipulation, which is a technique. It's a little bit similar to what chiropractors do, but we actually do several other techniques that they don't necessarily do.
Right.
So, and when we start the medical school, the whole philosophy is body, mind, and spirit. So it doesn't matter which system you're learning, you're approaching it body, mind, and spirit. So I was lucky to really have some great mentors along the way who kind of really taught me that you're not looking at this, you know, body with diseases and symptoms. You're looking at a human being who has something going on, and it's your job to figure out why. But it's not only like the presentation of what's happening. There's different levels of what's going on. So you have to figure out, you know, kind of 360 view. And then you're right. I think my upbringing also has a lot to do with the way I practice medicine. I'm from Mediterranean, from the Dalmatian coast. We spend a lot of time outside in the fresh air. We walk everywhere and we cook fresh food. I was just home recently. Every day you go to the market, you buy fresh food and you make the meal. We don't buy bread that stays in the pantry for a week or something like that. Mm-hmm. So this whole approach to life, it's really, you know, everyone comes at the table, sits at the dinner, you laugh, you touch, you cry, all of these things, like you really enjoy life. So I bring a lot of that to the way I practice medicine. And I do remember when I was doing training at University of Miami, I'm not like this super intelligent. I was not like, you know, top of the class. I graduated with good grades and I was, you know, I can't be too modest. I did good. But, you know, I was competing with the University of Miami students. But every professor I had at University of Miami always gave me better kind of grades at the end of the rotation than them, because what I did is as soon as I entered the room, I would sit at the bedside of the patient and kind of touch their hand and then talk and ask and then decide what needs to be done or whatever, where the other students not even look at the patient but already decide how they're going to approach you. They would order tests and things like that. So there, I think what maybe distinguishes Joe and me and why we get along, you guys have no idea. Joe is like probably one of my best friends. We talk all the time. But what distinguishes us is this human touch. It's just like human element is just part of who we are. And, you know, it doesn't matter who you're with. I think people can feel that.
I definitely think so. And thinking as a patient, if I was in a hospital or even at an appointment where I was ill, to have you come in and touch my hand would feel so, first of all, it's an immediate, like you said, the human touch, but there's a sense of caring from you, the doctor. There's a sense that you do actually care about my well-being. And that, I think, gives rise to a sense of trust. And when you have a sense that your doctor cares about you and you can trust that doctor, that is the kind of medicine and the kind of patient experience I think most people would want. And that is, I think, in American medicine, like Joe said in the piece and just earlier, it's get them in, get them out. There's no such thing as a true human connection, which I think is mandatory for optimal system care, I think. Joe, what are your thoughts?
Well, I mean, my thoughts are, you know, again, raised in Mexico, we have this connection with our family physician. Even though my family physician was a gynecologist, my mom's gynecologist, I mean, this is a man that we called for everything. This was a man that knew us by first name. He knew us from the time we were born to the time, you know, I mean, he's the reason why I became a doctor at some point in time. So then I come to the US, I end up at Stanford University, and all my colleagues are from Harvard, from Mayo and stuff like that. I'm the only foreign medical graduate out there. And yet I become the resident of the year. Why? Because when we're on call at night, when things are quiet, I would go in and I would go and just like Kat, I would check on the patients. If the patient was awake, I would go in, sit, talk to them, get a little more information. One of the things that I do on day-to-day basis, so you guys know, I do this on my practice. When you come to my office, the first thing that we ask you about, besides of your name, is what's the name of your dog? So what kind of dog do you have? What's his name or her name? And then when you come back, the first question that I ask you is, hey, how is Mimi or how is, you know, Duffy or whatever is the name of your dog? And people like that. People like that connection that we have been lacking. And it is amazing because I came to the US with the idea, oh my gosh, the best medicine in the world. Yes, it may be the best if you want to remove a very unique tumor or take care of the critically ill with whatever things. But at bedside, we are pretty bad. We are really, really bad. We don't listen to the patients because we don't have time to listen to the patients. Time is money. And unfortunately, you know, we don't get paid to listen to the patients. So a lot of doctors are doing that. Very few people will sit with a patient and, you know, hold their hands or stuff like that nowadays.
Yeah, I think some of our listeners, our viewers tonight are frustrated with what you described, the in and out, the in and out. Somebody, let's see, who is this? This is Angela, who's watching right now, said that she's gotten tired of changing doctors and she just stopped going to them. The experience was so frustrating. What would you advise? We'll get into a little bit of how you go about changing a doctor and seeking out a doctor. I just have to say there's going to be very few Dr. Kat Lindley's and Dr. Joe Verone's in the world, but you want a doctor. There are many doctors, many practitioners out there who have a more patient-centered view of how they practice medicine. So we'll talk a little bit about how people can go about finding those doctors. But Angela wanted to know, how would you respond to the fact that the frustration has built to the point that people just don't want to go to doctors anymore? That sounds like a pretty dangerous solution.
What I would tell Angela is, Angela, you are not alone. So that you get an idea, the average number of doctors that a patient has seen before they come to me is 21. That just gives you an idea. And when they come to me, they are so frustrated. You know, they have seen, they've been bounced around from one to another, to another, to another, and they all end up going to a psychiatrist. They all get sent to a psychiatrist. And yes, they have multiple complaints, especially because we've been seeing a lot of vaccine-related injuries, a lot of post-COVID syndromes. Yes, you're going to have a lot of misunderstanding of what's going on with these patients. But these patients are frustrated. And the moment you sit down with them, one thing that I do with my patients, I tell them all, tell them, make no mistake. We're going to get to the bottom of what you have, and we're going to try to do our best to fix it. I mean, they need that reassurance. So she is not alone by saying, you know, she's just tired. But there are doctors out there, and Kat and I, we know a few that are people that really care, regardless of their ultimate specialty. They really care, and they are out there. We both have a friend in common who is an ophthalmologist, a very well-known ophthalmologist in Houston, that he's out there doing direct primary care in addition to doing his cataracts and the other things that he does. I mean, there are doctors out there. We just need to give you some ideas as to how to find them.
Okay, so let's get into that.
Joyce, I want to be fair. One thing that Joe will tell you, I always play devil's advocate in our discussions. Whoops, and I lost one of my headphones. The system is broken, and our colleagues in the system are trying to do the best they can. Sometimes even in the system, you have some amazing doctors, but there are restrictions within that system. And Joy is correct. The way you really fix this underlying problem is really to break the system. How do you break the system? We have gone from practicing private medicine, from patients being able to go see their doctors who had their, you know, office or whatever, to now going to big institutions where they're kind of practicing what I call corporate practice of medicine. With corporate practice of medicine comes rules, regulations. You can only do this. You have to see patients every 10, 15 minutes. You have to have this many RVUs. You have to order this many tests. You have to send them to this place. You cannot send them to someone who is your, you know, who you know is probably the best person for them, but that person is outside of the system. The system is going to penalize you. So there are many restrictions on these doctors as well. The way you can really fix this is to kind of break the chains of the corporate medicine, which obviously will never happen because of the bureaucracy it is. But I just want to kind of say that there are some amazing doctors in the system, and we need to give them grace. And I'll go get my earphone while you guys are discussing other things.
I agree. Go ahead and find your other microphone.
While she cannot hear us, yes, she always plays the devil's advocate. And yes, there are lots of really good doctors. Unfortunately, some of them, like Kat was saying, they have their hands tied as to what they can and what they cannot do.
So yes, I think that is true. So one of our viewers, Dr. Lindley and Dr. Verone, wants to know if in searching for a new doctor, do you need, in your opinion, each of you, do you need to be independent in order to treat patients as you want to treat them? And if more doctors would, you know, open their own practice, such as the model you described of how you did it, Dr. Lindley, would we be able not to, you know, close down the system necessarily? Like you said, there are very, you know, big mountains to climb when it comes to that. But can we make a bigger difference for patients who are suffering within the system now?
Yeah, I truly feel that if you can find an independent physician who practices on their own and who aligns with your values, and that's extremely important. I always tell people, you kind of have to almost go as if you have a broken car and trying to find the best mechanic. You have to ask your friends and neighbors, do your research, and then ask tough questions. Don't just settle. And I do feel that if someone is independent, it's a little bit easier to be able to become an advocate for the patient. But like I said, you know, there are some amazing doctors within the system who still can do that. So I wouldn't say necessarily to abandon someone who is in the system. Someone said, I was looking at your chat and they said, so what you're saying is we need to abandon the system. And ultimately that's really the answer, because independent practice of medicine and kind of free market medicine are the ways to weed out the good and bad actors, I believe. And the most important thing is, you know, when patients come to see me, I don't really go to medications first. It's not something that I'll intuitively do. I'll try to figure out why things are happening and try to figure out, you know, the best lifestyle changes approach and things like that. So it's very kind of important to watch what the doctor will do and on your first visits and how they're going to handle some of your problems.
Mm-hmm. Joe?
No question that what Kat is saying is right on the point. I mean, again, that connection, that communication for an independent practitioner is extremely important to make decisions. Now, in all fairness, you know, at some point in time, and for the last 7 years up until about 6 months ago, I was part of a system that would allow me to do what I wanted to do. And when we had to think outside the box, I did not have any issues. So you will find those practitioners. Now, as far as defining the practitioner, the first thing that I would recommend is do not use Dr. Google. I mean, Dr. Google, you know, it's full of advertisements, people push through. I don't like that.
Yeah.
The best way to find an aligned provider is word of mouth. No question about it. You know, that's how I get my referrals. I said, how did you come to me? That's the second question I ask my patients. Who referred you to me?
Yeah.
I mean, some of them will see TV, another one will see my insurance company, but a good number of them says, oh, Mr. X or Y, or somebody that has been my patient that, you know, like the way I've been caring for them. That's the best way by which a person can get an aligned provider.
I definitely think word of mouth is the top of the ways that you can find another doctor. But let me just ask you, is there an association of, you know, like-minded other than, you know, we have a portal on our website, flccc.net, where we list some like-minded providers. However, is there an independent association where people can sort of go on and trust that maybe the members of this association are practicing in the same sort of patient-centered human touch way?
So obviously, like you said, FLCC has a lot of resources there, but also AAPS online, Association of American Physicians and Surgeons, will have a list of direct primary care doctors and direct specialist doctors. So I'll explain a little bit what direct primary care is for maybe some of the viewers who don't understand exactly what it is. So direct primary care is a membership-based primary care practice. I'll tell you my prices because you can go on my website.
It's so Lindley Medical. Is that akin to a concierge practice?
It's a little bit different, and it's mainly the pricing part. So my website is lindleymedical.com, and anyone can go look at it because my prices are on the website. So for children, 0 to 17 is $35 a month. 18 to 40, I believe, is $60 a month or $65. I need to go look at my prices. And like 41 to 64 is $85, and then 65 and up is $110 a month. So that includes unlimited visits. Patients can call me. I was actually just texting to someone while Joe was talking. They can call me, text me, see me in the office. If it's an emergency, I'll do it on a weekend. It's whatever. It's like, it's your own practice. So you kind of make your own rules. And that covers pretty much all of the in-office care. And then I can get blood work anywhere from like $2-3 for basic labs to like, you know, $5, $10, $15, depending what type of specific labs I need. And then x-rays, about $40 to $60, CAT scan, $150, MRI, $425. And these are prices, kind of depends on your market. The nice thing about this is everything's upfront, you know the cost. If you have insurance, I have a lot of patients who have the insurance, but they like it because they don't have to worry about deductible. And it kind of helps them save the money. I have a lot of patients who have HSA, can use their HSA. And then you have some patients who are uninsured and they find this way, save the money, and they might get like emergency type of insurance if something happens and they end up in a hospital. Now you also have concierge, like you mentioned. Concierge tends to be a little bit more, and it's kind of, you pay like a yearly fee, and it tends to be like, you know, several thousand dollars. And some of the concierge still will bill insurance, while direct primary care doctors will not bill the insurance. The other thing I want to mention with direct primary care, if you have insurance and you want to use your insurance for any kind of test, you can, or you can choose to pay cash. So it's very easy to budget and see what you want to do. We're also starting to get direct specialists. So for example, Mary Tally Bowden, who everyone knows really well, yes, and we love her. She's a direct care specialist, and you can go on her website. I believe it's like mdbreed.com or something.
Yeah, Breed MD.
Yes. So you can go on her website, and she has her prices there as well. And for a specialist, her prices are amazing. And it's, you know, and so this is the kind of way that patients know exactly what they're paying for and what they're going to get. So I find it a really useful and helpful, because there is no hidden fees, and there is no, like, you know, the third person in the room, which is usually like the insurance that, you know, lots of times, like if someone needs an MRI, the doctor will say, well, I can't do the MRI, but then we need to do X-ray first because insurance will not cover it. So someone like me is like, no, we just go directly to what you need. So you can go to, there is a website, I actually just looked it up while we were talking. It's called DPC. So D like David, P like Paul, C like Charlie, DPCFrontier.com.
DPC Frontier?
Yes.
Okay.
.com. I'll put it in the chat. And you can, there is a map of United States, and you can click on your state, and it will list some of the DPC practices around the United States. So you can find your direct primary care physician that way.
Great. Joe, is your practice set up similarly to Dr. Lindley's?
Actually, no. She's been educating me to do this, because, you know, I've had that situation in which I've had a lot of indigent patients that cannot even afford the $35 a month. And, you know, I take care of them already for free. But the question is, what do you do in some of the other, especially some of the patients that have insurance, that the insurance company will not allow them to have a CAT scan or something else unless it's ordered by a doctor within the system. So I've had some of these patients for 20, 25 years, and I just feel bad of separating myself from them. So Kat has been talking to me about it. Trust me, I've been doing my research. Right now, I continue to see patients with insurance, without insurance, but I think that even as a doctor, it's a good idea to move into a system like the one that Kath mentions, because at least you know what you're getting. Right now, I see a patient in my office, and I get 3 denials from the insurance company for whatever reason. They just find reasons to deny it. And then eventually, they give you cents on whatever you bill. So I think that's important. But more importantly, this idea of direct primary care or direct patient care is fascinating. Think about it. Think about how much money individuals would save by having somebody like that just pay, you know, the fee for the year, and then have also the catastrophic insurance available in case that you end up in the hospital and I have to take care of you in the hospital. I think just look at the cost I pay for employees and I pay for my family medical insurance. It cost me an arm and a leg. If I was going to go to a system like CATS uses, it would be just a fraction of what I currently pay.
Yeah. There's a viewer online, Kathy, asks if patients have difficulty getting admitted to hospitals since you are not aligned with medical systems. And what happens then? Do they get care by the hospital docs or the hospitalist? Do they get care from you? How does that work?
So what happens is, for all of us, in order to put a patient in a hospital, you have to have hospital privileges. So let's assume that one patient goes to a hospital where I don't belong, or I'm not part of that that system. Well, the patient is admitted. He's usually seen by the hospitalist or by the intensivist or stuff like that. And one of the problems that I have with those systems is that the vast majority of them, they don't send you the patient back. They literally keep the patient within their system. And that's really bad. Because, you know, let's say this patient that you have seen for years and years and years, for whatever reason, ends up in hospital X, is seen by doctors at hospital X, and now he's part of hospital X. I have patients of mine that have gone to get a simple chest X-ray at one of the big hospitals that I'm not affiliated with. And they get text messages on their cell phones to go ahead and make an appointment with their primary care doctors. You said, what in the world is going on? I've been caring for this patient for decades, and now you guys are wanting to take this patient. And it's, so you know, Joyce, this is not a money issue. I don't care about the money, because as I told you, they paid us almost nothing. I care about that doctor-patient relationship that I've had for so many years with this particular individual that out of the blue is being taken away. And
that is that considered unethical? How is that viewed in the wider system?
It's completely unethical, but they still do it, and they do it every single day. I have patients of mine that tell me, Dr. Varon, I got this text about this primary care of this hospital. Are you affiliated with them? I said, I know nothing about this. What in the world is going on?
Wow. Dr. Lindley, go ahead.
Well, if you don't mind, Joyce, I'll address a couple of questions because they're related to what we're talking about.
Yes, of course.
Someone asked, do DPC doctors take insurance? So none of us take the insurance for our part of the service. So like I said, this membership fee, it's a monthly membership fee, and you pay based on age. We all tend to vary it a little bit, but we're very much kind of in ballpark of each other. It kind of depends where do you live, which state, are you more suburban or you like, you know, things like that. So you might find little variations, but I would say most will have prices similar to mine. Now, if you have insurance, I can still order everything within the system because I've kept all my licenses, all my numbers and things like that. So if you need to have MRI and you don't want to pay cash, you want to use it and to go towards your deductible, your DPC doctors can still order within the system. And you can see your regular specialists who take insurance. I can send referrals to them and things like that. If you ever need surgery, everything goes through your insurance. It's just that my part between you and me is without the insurance. And the other thing I wanted to say about that, maybe it will come to me. But and then the question that you had about none of us. No one in family, most, so I should never say none. Most of us do not admit to the hospital anymore, which means that even if I was employed by the hospital, I wouldn't be going to see that patient in the hospital. The patient would be seen by hospitalists because that's what hospitals like. They like to have hospitalists admitting and not the outside doctors. There is very small percentage of primary care doctors who will still, you know, admit patients to the hospital. So like Joe said, what you should do as a physician is develop a relationship with the hospitalist. If your patient ends up in a hospital, you can actually get the report from them when they leave the hospital. But otherwise, we don't take care of them once they're there.
So what is the impact on the patient? Because that sounds like a lack of continuity of care. What is the impact on the patient to have that? For example, you may have prescribed something different for the patient in a hospital setting than is prescribed or treatment by the hospitalist. So what, if anything, is the impact, health impact on the patient being treated by a hospitalist? Now, this is just every patient because they're mostly taken care of by hospitalists. I've often just wondered for every patient, what is the impact?
The impact is huge. And it's huge. I mean, I have the advantage that I can admit to hospitals and I enjoy hospital medicine, but the impact is huge. Just think about it. You have known a patient for a decade. You know everything about them. You know everything that does well or not. And you continue to take care of them in the hospital. That's awesome. But if, again, you have somebody that is a hospitalist that has only 15 minutes to see you, writes orders as fast as they can, because again, it's get them in, get them out. How can they provide the same care of somebody that has known the patient, that continuity of care. That's what we're missing in medicine today, continuity of care. The fragmentation of the system is unreal. Actually, Kat and I were writing a book about, you know, a parallel healthcare system. And one of the things that keeps on coming back over and over again is this fragmentation. This, you send the patient to a place and then you don't know whatever happened. The communication bridge is broken.
Yeah.
So ahead, I just want to say, so that's a problem whether the doctor is independent or in the system, because that communication is broken on both levels. But I'm really big on accountability, and kind of unspoken contract I have with my patients is that they need to participate in their care. And this is one of the reasons I actually feel that healthcare should not be free. I feel that it needs to be affordable, it needs to be accessible, but that people have to invest in their health, whatever that amount is, because when you actually invest yourself, you actually act differently. You have a stake in feeling healthy and in doing well. So, you know, when my patients go somewhere, hospital or specialist or whatever, they know they have a homework. And homework is to let me know what happened, that I will have certain questions, that I will want things to know. And sure, they might not be able to get, you know, the full story, but it will be good enough for them to get some of the stories so that we can, because I want them to ask, why am I having this test? Why are you giving me this medicine? You know, I don't want them just to accept everything as it's just given to them. So that's why I really feel that this accountability financially and personally is really important aspect of good healthcare.
Great. Let's take a couple of other questions. Lev wants to know, Dr. Varone, you said look for a doctor who thinks outside the box, and wants to know exactly what you mean by thinking outside the box.
Let's first define what the box is. And let's say, for example, the box during the pandemic was, let's go ahead and give remdesivir to anybody that comes to the hospital, even though remdesivir doesn't work and makes things bad. So those of us who started to think outside the box, which actually developed a variety of treatment options that were better for patients, would be the kind of doctor or healthcare provider that I would look at. Now, a lot of this, you know, straightforward thought that is not generated by independent thought, independent doctors that are, you know, researching or finding out. A lot of this is what we are being fed. And this is one of the things that I've had a lot of issues with, because we get fed a lot of information from the pharmaceutical industry. And unfortunately, the pharmaceutical industry has not the most ethical principles around, as we saw during COVID. And that's an issue. That is an issue that is significant. So you want to make sure that if you're going to find a doctor, a healthcare provider that really, yes, knows what the, you know, the standard is being said, but also looks at alternative options. And it's a person that's going to give you, hey, there is only one way to fix this. No, I mean, there is this way, but these other options are out there. And at least is willing to work with you. A lot of my patients, to be honest with you, especially in the last couple of years, I mean, they are well educated. There are people that have, like I told you, they've been through 20 doctors before they come to me. They have read, they know stuff, and they come asking specific questions. And I think that as a patient, you have that responsibility, the responsibility of educating yourself on the illness that you have and what are the treatment options. The problem is that when you Google your illness, you're going to have millions of hits. Yes. And you don't know which one of them are legit and which ones of them are not legit.
Yeah.
That's why when you are trying to find a doctor, your best bet is that word of mouth that we were talking about, more than your Dr. Google, like I call it.
Dr. Google. Well, on that same thought, you know, Kat, you talked about investing in your own health, and Joe, you're talking about investing in another way through being your own advocate, health advocate. But on the question of thinking outside the box, Matt has a question asking, do you see an avenue to integrate functional-based medicine with the modern medicine, traditional medicine, to complete the patient care experience? What do you both think?
I would say that both Joe and I are functional allopathic doctors. We might not have the degree in functional medicine, but the functional medicine, you know, intuitively, if you think about it, it's looking at body, mind, and spirit, right? Looking at all aspects of what's affecting someone and trying to find different modalities. You have to be not only as a patient, you know, open-minded, but physician has to be open-minded. And sometimes, you know, patient will tell you exactly what they need and how they need it. And medicine is kind of one of those lifelong learning experiences. There is something you learn every day. You know, there are some things that we discussed last night in one of our meetings that we have on Tuesday nights. And it's really important to be open to learning and not to just, you know, stay inside the box, because once you put yourself inside the box, then you really are limiting the experience for yourself and the patient.
And one of the best examples of that is, you know, what I'm doing currently in my practice. So yes, I'm a Western clinician, you know, I do everything, you know, based on the science that I learned. Yet in my practice, my daughter, who is a doctor of traditional Chinese medicine practices. So when I have, let's say, a patient with post-COVID syndrome, yes, I go ahead and I start the patients on some of the FLCC protocols, but then I immediately give her a referral and says, hey, can you see them? And the combination of what she does with what I do gives us excellent results, excellent results. And that's what I think a lot of doctors are lacking. They still think that a lot of the you know, other types of medicine are hocus pocus. And no, I mean, this is, you have to integrate both things. Both have good people and bad people. You just have to find the right ones.
Yeah, let me just ask you tangentially, you mentioned your daughter is a practitioner of Chinese medicine. Can you give me the elevator sort of definition of what is Chinese medicine based upon and how is it manifested here in the U.S.?
I wish I could, because, you know, you can imagine as she was growing through this phase, our conversations in the table were very difficult because they have a completely different approach to medicine. They consider the yin and the yang. You know, you need to have the balance in energy. They divide your body in a variety of meridians. Don't ask me how it works. For example, acupuncture. I mean, it works. There is no question about it. I cannot tell you from my side of the medicine how it works, but the fact that I see that it works both in myself as well as my patients allows me to give it. In addition to that, you know, they do all the natural herbs, they do moxibustion, they do cupping, they do so many things. And so that we know, you know, traditional Chinese medicine has been around for 10,000 years.
Yes, of course.
And it's still going on. So it's something that is worth doing. And I keep on telling myself, you know, why didn't I do this? This is so fascinating because it's super interesting. And they do things that are beyond belief.
Yeah. Let's get, yeah, and go ahead.
I was just going to say, I spent a week in Beijing actually teaching at the medical school. And we were teaching them osteopathic manipulation, how to evaluate low back pain and the syndromes with the low back pain issues. And it was actually fascinating to watch them and what they do. You know, when you go to your doctor and you present with low back pain and there's no red flags, you know, they'll recommend maybe anti-inflammatories, muscle relaxants, physical therapy or chiropractor, whatever. It kind of depends. But those are kind of things you're going to think about. Medicine is like the last thing they recommend. And if they give you any medicine, it's like the lowest dose possible. So, you know, watching the Chinese, and this is a traditional Chinese medicine, kind of like the allopathic version of Chinese physicians. It's fascinating how much lifestyle and, you know, one of the things that I saw everywhere was people doing Tai Chi and these different other things in the parks. So yeah, it's really fascinating learning how other cultures practice medicine.
Definitely, definitely. How interesting. Let's get back to some of the viewer questions. There are lots of questions, doctors, about Medicare. Michelle is asking, and she said she's just retired and she's self-insured until she gets Medicare next year in July of 2025. Is there an alternative care doctor that she can get now who will also be able to work with Medicare later? She's wondering if she wants even to plan on Medicare, since they may restrict what she refers to in her question as proper medical care.
So I have some patients who do have Medicare, but again, I don't take Medicare myself. So for my part of the relationship, that financial responsibility, patient pays the monthly fee, which for the Medicare patients, I believe I said it was $110 a month. Now, when it comes to everything else, whether they need medications, labs, x-rays, referrals, they can use the Medicare part of the equation. I do feel that in American system, insurance does have a role because of that, like Joe was saying, catastrophic part. What happens if you do end up in a hospital, you were in a car accident and you need surgery? You really need something to help you kind of financially on that side. Otherwise, you could go bankrupt. But I do feel that, you know, budgeting what you can do. And for those who are employed, looking into health savings accounts and then getting catastrophic insurance or high deductible plans where they can maybe save some money, you can actually find some insurance agents who actually do recommend direct primary care, or you can do health sharing ministries. I, for my family, my husband actually has insurance through his work. But insuring me and five children on his plan would have cost a whole lot of money. Wow. So what we did for my kids and myself, we paid $500, I think, a month for the health sharing ministry. So if I go to the doctor for just the regular visits, I would just pay the doctor whatever that fee is. And then I can submit the bill to the health sharing ministry. And there is a deductible after which, you know, they'll start paying. But if I end up in a hospital or if I need surgery, after you meet your deductible for the health sharing ministry, they will cover that. And they actually negotiate with the hospital. So they end up paying lower rates that you would pay with insurance. So there's a lot of things out there. And I highly, highly recommend these insurance brokers who understand the free market side of the medicine with kind of coupled with the traditional insurance plan.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Dr. Lindley, we have people asking if you see patients outside of Texas.
So we are really kind of chained, for lack of the better word, by our medical state boards. So currently, I do only have a license in Texas. Several years ago, I had one in Oklahoma, North Dakota, Louisiana, Florida, and I probably will actually expand my licenses. But you cannot see patients outside of the state that you have the medical license with. Some people are doing, you know, different tribal type medicines and things like that. I am just a little bit more cautious. I'm very much, I try to follow the rules because I think it's very easy for physicians to lose their license. So I want to be sure that I do everything the way I think it's correct.
Yeah. We have a question from Tatiana for Dr. Lindley and Joe. You can weigh in as well. Tatiana is a direct primary care physician. She's struggling to get her practice to grow in Massachusetts. And coincidentally, she's part Croatian. She wants to know.
That's awesome.
If you have any immediate.
You have to answer that one. I mean, sorry. I can only do the Mexicans, so.
As I know, she's not part Mexican, but she is part Croatian. Go ahead, Dr. Lindley.
So, Tatiana, I'm from Split. I would love to know where you're from. The way I opened my practice was actually, I live in suburbs, kind of Fourth Ward. So it's a small town, almost like half rural, half, suburb area. And I didn't bring any patients from my other practice. Like I said, I rented a small office, started very lean. And then as I grew, I started buying more things. And even now, I really don't have too many things. Just things like sometimes bells and whistles distract you more than anything. So instead of like advertising with these big, radio ads or paper, newspaper, what I did, I just sponsored a high school team. Not really high school, it was really youth teams. So like baseball, basketball. And your name goes there. And then also, I always carry my doctor's bag. So when I was at a game, sometimes patients need me to look at their ear or something. I think to be a good direct primary care doctor, you need to think outside of the box. And there is no wrong way. Mm-hmm. There's only your way. Whatever is good for you, that's how you kind of grow the practice. And I supplemented my income initially by doing shifts in the urgent care because I was aware that, while I'm growing the practice, I still need to bring some income, and that helped a lot.
Yeah, I can imagine. One more question, and then we're going to reach the top of the hour. So Dr. Barone, for you, it appears that most physicians are booked out 6 to 9 months. And this is from Kristen. So she says, effectively, there is no immediate access, save the emergency room or urgent care, to most primaries and specialists. She doesn't know how to hack this one. Any ideas are appreciated.
And, unfortunately, that's what we see. So, for example, when I have a patient that comes to my office and I think he or she needs to go to see a specialist for something else, I lift up the phone and I call that person and I said, hey, can you see this person before November of this year or whatever? Because most of them, you are correct. I mean, they're totally booked. So you need to have that extra thing. And that's one thing that the direct primary care model that the physicians like us do. We have those connections. We have those people. We have those people that think like us. If I call one of my friends, no matter how busy they are in their practices, they will see the patient. So part of what you need to do is, again, find a doctor that can do these kinds of things. That means when you are getting your information from your friends, from some reviews that you have read about them, from whatever, that you will see that particular thing. Hey, you know what? He sent me to the eye doctor, but the eye doctor was busy, but he lifted up the phone and he got me to go and see the doctor the next day. So that's the kind of doctor that I want to have. That's the kind of doctor that I believe we all need to have. Yes, we get very busy, but most of these clinicians that are so busy are practices that are seeing volume, which is a thing that I talked to you at the very beginning. They yeah. see quantity, not quality. And that's what you need to step away from. You need to go to clinicians that want to take care of you as an individual, not as a number, not as a diagnosis. I don't want you to come in as, oh, there is another diabetic, or, oh, there is another, lung cancer is coming in. That's not what you want. And one of the things that, we have been working very hard at FLCC over the last couple of years is trying to make sure that people understand this. This is part of our mission that we started at FLCC, and we need to continue. We need to help people. If you cannot create a new system, because we know that the system is broken, then at least within the system, try to find those people who are the best in what they do to help you as a human, not as a diagnosis, not as a number.
Well, we had a comment from somebody on the chat. It just sort of rolled by, and I thought, wow. The person said, I love these two physicians as people. And I hear that because, you, Dr. Barone, I've known for almost 4 years to the day when we began the FLCCC. And Kat, I have seen you so much, and your persona and the way you approach people, and as not patients, but as people who need medical help is so endearing to me. And I think, you know, our mission is one of humanitarianism. And that always has to be first and foremost. But before we leave, I just want each of you to just give one final thought, if you will, about how you can, you know, if people are a little skittish about having to change doctors. You've given us every good strategy already about how to do that, what to look for, but, you know, how people find this issue very delicate because they don't want to hurt the doctor's feelings. Maybe it's just an onerous job because there's so much to transfer over, and how will this, you know, what advice would you give them, a final word about, you know, handling this delicate maneuver?
So one of the things that I've heard the most for the past, you know, couple of years, but even kind of this year, is I don't trust doctors. I'm never going to go to the doctor again. And that kind of breaks my heart because I truly love medicine. It's like, you know, I don't think I, well, if I wasn't a doctor, I would be a musician. I was going to be a singer for all the things that you guys need to know. Because I love music just as much, but medicine is really like the way of life. And I think what we need to do is, you know, our job, Joe's and my job, is to restore the trust in medicine. And I hope that we accomplish that at least a little tonight. But there are some great doctors out there. And I do want people to really think about this. And I always use this example because everyone understands what I'm going to say. If you're having right lower quadrant pain, you're not eating, you're feeling really bad, you're starting to have fever, getting nauseous, the pain is getting more intense, I really hope you're going to go to the hospital because you might die from appendicitis. So don't get to that point in your life, right? You need to start developing this relationship with someone that you trust. Interview them. Make sure that they have the same values as you. Don't feel bad, you know? If they needed your services and they didn't like you, they wouldn't come back. Treat it like that. You really are in driver's seat. This is a consumer-driven industry. So take advantage of that. You know, you don't like someone, you go somewhere else until you find home and look for a home. Once you find home, things are just going to click and you're going to be happy and they're going to be happy. So that's really my message is I hope that Joe and I have restored a little bit of trust back, and we need to start trusting each other more.
I love that whole notion of find home. That's beautiful. And it's a wonderful way to think about what you would be going to instead of the situation you currently find yourself in with your doctor. Joe, what about you?
Gosh, I mean, it's, you know, Kat always takes the words away from me. But actually, one of the attendees just posted something that kept my eye. And he said, this is like finding a good friend. That means, you know a lot of people, but you're going to have only one or two good friends. How do you do that in life? I mean, you go through meeting a lot of people, exactly the same. You're not going to be going out with a person that you just think it's not following your same values. So do the same with your doctor. Don't be scared about switching 20 times if you have to switch 20 times. Yeah. Of course, if it's an emergency, like Kat is saying, go to the emergency room, get taken care of. But, yeah, you know, if it's something that you've had chronic that you want to work with somebody that is entrained with what you think. He may not agree with you, and that's okay. You know, in many instances, I disagree with my patients. But when I disagree with them, I tell them why, I tell them my reasons, and then I let them make a decision. Make sure that your doctor that you're going to be finding gives you that value, the value that you are part of, just like Kat was saying earlier, you are responsible for your health. So let's do something to be part of that fix for this broken system.
What a joy it has been to be with you this evening. And thanks to our viewers for asking the questions. I know we'll be discussing this more in the future. And of course, we'll talk in just a moment about the fact that the lectures that you gave at the winter conference are now online at the FLCCC about this topic, are able to be accessed by everyone. So on behalf of all of our viewers and myself and everyone at the FLCCC, you are both treasures. Thank you so, so much. We have a couple of announcements. Thank you. We have a couple of announcements for you tonight with regard to, first of all, this discussion. We have more good information for you from, as we just said, from these doctors, Dr. Barone, Kat Lindley, fellow doctor, our own Dr. J.P. Salibi. You can listen to their full lecture, as we just said, on the screen. You can just scan the QR code up there. It's a patient's guide to finding aligned providers. Now that was recorded, as we said, at February's Healthcare Revolution Conference in Phoenix, and it's available as part of our Education on Demand platform. You really don't want to miss it, or any of the other lectures at the conference for that matter. They were extraordinary. There's another resource here called 5 Reasons to Change Your Doctor. After tonight, and really after these 4 years, right, you may be feeling for yourself, it's time for you to find a doctor who gives you more time and consideration and who listens, who really seems to care, as Kat and Joe talked about what's troubling you. And if you have been inspired tonight to finally make that change, or if people close to you are struggling with doctors who just don't seem to listen to them, send them this 5 Reasons to Change Your Doctor and How to Do It. Having a good doctor, as you know, is essential and could probably save your life. Next, on a recent webinar, testing for spike protein was discussed. And since then, we have received messages of concern from many of you. And thank you for weighing in with us. We always like to hear from you to know more about this. So we have a brand new post up now addressing your concerns, and you could read it now at the web address on your screen. Next, our Dr. Corey has been busy, busy, busy with media appearances. This most recent interview was with Tucker Carlson, and they covered some really serious ground: excess deaths, censorship, the costs of speaking up, where we are today, and even more importantly, where we go from here. You can watch it now. Use the link on screen to pass this one along to friends and family. We have another FLCCC X space coming up next week to follow up to a space we hosted in November, focusing on military mandates and impacts. Next Tuesday, March 26, our own nurse Christina Moros will be live with former Lieutenant Colonel Brad Miller and vaccine injured veteran Drew Outstanding. Have your questions ready, please. You can set a reminder for the space using the on-screen link, and make sure to follow our social channels and forums for updates. And speaking of Christina Moros, is Christina in the house? Yes, she is. Hi, Christina.
House, Joyce.
Pardon?
I'm in the house.
You are in the house. Hey, you're the one who put together that spike protein information, correct?
Yes. Myself and some of our lovely providers within our network, we formulated that and weighed out some evidence and had a discussion about it and came up with the best and most scientifically based answer for that question and put it our followers can understand.
Yeah, it's of concern to many. We've raised the issue many, many times on this program and on our website and other media outlets, but it's an important resource. So thank you for doing that. And thank you for answering questions tonight. What kind of a night was it for you?
I was really busy. A lot of questions about costs, patient costs for care, insurance reimbursements. There some people's comments about certain states not having support to help finance their practices. And all I can say on all those subjects is it takes a lot of courage to step outside of the system and support what these independent practitioners are doing, because they also have a lot of financial cost stepping out and not taking reimbursement from insurance to allow the care needed for these patients. So I think it's also important to give our FLCCC practitioners a little bit of grace and their practice. They're not trying to price gouge. They're doing the best they can to help as many people as possible.
Yeah, I mean, it's an act of courage and an act of faith to step out of the system and do as Kat did. And she was so inspiring.
Yes.
And that, you know, I think that goes a long way.
Yes.
To really helping people understand that there's another way to practice medicine, and that is with a human touch and the trust and caring that comes with that. So this program will be on Rumble and our website, of course. And so if anybody hasn't seen it, and they can dial it up and also watch from the conference their presentation on how to change your doctor. So thank you very much, Christina. As always, you do such a great job for us, and we're always grateful. Thank you.
Chris.
Thanks. And thanks, last but not least, to all of you for joining us tonight and for joining us in this mission, this incredible, ever-expanding mission. We have an update to share with you about our Healthcare Revolution campaign. So far, we have raised over $60,000 from 470 supporters. That is just tremendous. Thank you so much. There is still time, luckily, to have your gift doubled thanks to a match from two very generous FLCCC benefactors now through next Tuesday, March 26th. So thank you all for everything you give, everything you do. We'll see you next week, but take a minute to watch another amazing My Story. This one is from Francis Scott, whose 19-year-old athlete son began experiencing arrhythmias. Here's her story. Good night, everyone.
Hi, I'm Francis Scott. And I am so appreciative to FLCCC for helping me help other people through COVID and through potentially adverse events after people I knew, friends and, you know, acquaintances took a product that maybe they wished in retrospect they hadn't taken. So I first saw Dr. Corey's testimony about ivermectin, and it just really touched my heart. How exhausted he was, how much passion, and also when I saw Dr. Merrick, I believe at a Senator Johnson hearing, talking and his voice cracking, and that just like broke my heart because I knew how much he cared about his patients. And so immediately I trusted them and started listening to what they were saying about ivermectin and vitamin D, vitamin C. And so when my family got COVID, we tried to get it, but we couldn't. And I did what I could, quercetin and the different things that were just over the counter that I could give to my family. And we made it through just fine. And my son in September of 2022 developed a sudden onset of severe heart issues. Scared to death he was gonna die. 19 years old, hockey player, in very good shape. And suddenly was having chest pains, arrhythmias. I listened to his heart, it sounded like a disco in there. And I was like, you know, is this myocarditis? Is this pericarditis? What's going on? The first night at the ER, they didn't even listen to him, didn't do any blood work, and told him he had anxiety. And so the next night when it happened again, he woke me up this time, and I took him in and had him, you know, ask for a D-dimer, ask for troponin, ask for all the things that I had heard talked about on FLCCC, and they did find an arrhythmia. I did convince him to try one course of 5 days of ivermectin, and he did say that plus the intermittent fasting that FLCCC recommends helped his arrhythmia. So over the past, you know, couple months or over the next 6 months, he gradually said it got better, his arrhythmia, and he was able to go back to sport. So thank you so much for teaching us and for having the heart for patients that you do.
Your stories are powerful. They change hearts and minds. Share yours today. Send it in to mystory@flcc.net.